Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. Easton Cowan isn't playing. Baker Mayfield, bad game for him. Mike Evans, done for the year. And a Nico Collins concussion. How will that impact the Texans' passing game? Hey, Bob, how you doing?
These are all the questions everybody wants to hear us answer.
The Blue Jays are in the World Series for the first time since I was 18 years old. Look, I already made it about me.
So if you had that on your bingo card, yeah. How does Matt make this about him?
Oh, I got, bingo. I've already got five. I've already got five of them.
I actually have to start off with a retraction because I said that this city wasn't in love with this team. Mm. That may have been true. Mm-hmm. It is no longer true.
Yes.
This city loves this team because this team is so lovable. This team reminds me a bit of the 2019 Raptors, where there's just so much goodwill around them. First of all, that game last night was exactly what you want out of sports. There were highs, there were lows, there was tension, there were stakes. I mean, it was a definitive textbook game seven.
Oh, yeah. And everything flipped. Like, the great thing is how unexpected that game was. You know what? Here it goes. I'm going to compare it to From Dusk Till Dawn.
Ooh.
Where the first half, you know, there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of things going on, but there's not a lot of action. The Blue Jays, going into the seventh inning, their bats had done very little. The RBI single by Varsho, and that ball somehow squeezed past the infield. But beyond that, they did nothing. Kirby in the bullpen for Seattle was great. And the Jays, they were the ones kind of holding on for dear life a little bit. And then in the seventh, George Springer, who did nothing in game six, did nothing in his two at-bats leading up to the seventh inning. And then suddenly he is like, there's vampires attacking George Clooney. That game switched. Like, it went from one atmosphere to a completely other one.
Dan Schulman nailed it when he said, even if no one said it, everyone kind of knew in that seventh inning it was going to happen then or it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
They were pretty much, I don't want to say lifeless, but they were being stymied to that point.
They were lifeless. They got a couple like two-out singles, but they weren't challenging. There wasn't moments you're like, oh.
In the first inning, they did.
Yes.
The pushback in the first inning was there. But since the first inning, Seattle really threw a fire blanket on top of them.
Yep.
And it felt like, okay, you got two men on. If you don't at least get one here, you know, with their, you know, closer just around the corner, mm-hmm. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
The timing of it was just extraordinary. You know, I want to go into the game and I want to go into the World Series matchup, but I kind of want to throw a couple things out first mm-hmm. before we do that. I'm curious to get your take on them. We talked before the series with the Yankees started. What has to happen for the city to fall in love with Vlad? Well, it's happened times 10. He feels right now like the most loved athlete in the city. Agreed?
100%.
He feels right now like everything we've wanted out of an athlete in this city for about since Kyle Lowry left, really. And Kyle Lowry isn't as great at his sport as Vlad is at his best at his.
Correct.
I can't remember the last time we had someone this good who loves the city this much and is having this much success. He's kind of a unique case in our lifetime.
He really is, because first
you... It's been since the 93 Jays.
It is. And the thing is since probably Alomar, but Vlad was drafted and developed here. Now, yeah. Alomar got traded and he was here for a bunch of years. It wasn't like he was a mercenary or anything like that. But you've got to check all the boxes where draft develop, check. Mm-hmm. Also, Canadian roots because his father, like, and he was born in Montreal. So now you get that as well. Then add very, very talented. Then add successful in the postseason, where he's been the best player in this postseason. He's been better than Judge or Otani or Cal Raleigh or whatever you want to do. Like, he checks every box. I can't think of anyone, Bob.
And I'm going to add something really important here. When he showed up in that Matthews jersey to game seven,
we all had the same joke.
We all had the same joke, but I also think we all knew bet he gets this. Mm-hmm. He's not just some rental. He's not Ricky Henderson who just showed up, you know, like, to your point, he was developed here. But even, like, I'm not sure Austin Matthews gets it. And he wears an Austin Matthews jersey to every single one of his games. It felt like he understood what was really at stake for this city, and he embraced it.
He did embrace it. And think of the pressure. He's 26. He signed for $500 million. He's the face of the team, and they're in the playoffs. And his last 89 at-bats of the regular season, zero home run. It's not that he didn't contribute, but it's not like he was the big star down the stretch. And the playoff starts, and now he has as many home runs as Joe Carter or Jose Bautista had in their entire Jays career.
And it's in the field, too, because he's been terrific at first base.
Yep.
He's been an all-star in the field, and the defense in general has been great, but Vladdy is really as good as anybody. And he's hitting, what, like 460 over the course of the playoffs?
Only Aaron Judge has a better batting average.
Right, and Aaron Judge is now watching like everybody else.
And Aaron Judge didn't have the power numbers that Vlad has had.
And when he tears up because he's going to the World Series with this team, I tear up at home because I want this team to do so well. I wanted it to do well for all the people in our city, for all the people who need something good to cheer for, myself included. Not every athlete is willing to take that on. Many of them are the don't call me a role model. Many of them are I'm paid to deliver, but nothing more than that. And that's fine. But when he's tearing up, it's like he gets it. He gets why we love this. He loves it the same way we do. This is a non-rational, totally emotional response to it. But in that moment, Vlad became the man of the moment.
He is the man of Canada right now. He's been the best player in baseball. Game six, when they won, and Hazel May did the great thing interviewing him and then, you know, let him
have the camera shot.
The camera shot, but also just Hazel backed away. And Vlad also just drank in the moment. And he's 26. Most times when you're 26, you have a hard time appreciating when you're in this perfect moment. And it felt like he knew, yeah, even though there's still so much at stake and there's a game seven the next night, I'm going to drink in this moment. And he did. So it's passing every test. He also has the benefit of the failure of the core four means we love him more when he does well in the playoffs. And he doesn't have the same weight of tortured past as Leaf stars do, because at least the Blue Jays won the World Series in 93. And at least in 15 and 16,
well,
they won a
couple. Well, they've been to the championship series.
They've been
a couple times.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's not like the Leafs that haven't gotten out of the second round, you know, since 2002. I want to just roll over a couple of reasons why we love this team so much. One is the obvious, they've refused to quit. The turnabout in the series has been really dramatic. They were down 2. We all figured it was over. They win 2 in Seattle. They're down 3-2 coming back here. You've got to win back-to-back games. Not easy to do against another team that's really good. And then in the final game, they're down 3-1 in the seventh inning and look down and out. They got the Michael Myers thing. They just refuse to stay dead. And as a sports fan, one, you love the grit. But two, you love the drama. Every time you think, okay, I'm checked out and I'm happy with what I've gotten, it's like finding a French fry in the bottom of the bag. There's more. This is great.
You go French fry, I go Cal Raleigh's Dr. Loomis. If we're going to...
If Dr. Loomis had that little cop mustache, the David Arquette mustache.
Yeah.
also, you know what I like about this? The balance of this team is they're a really good mix of great players and then overachieving pretty good players.
Yeah.
Like you've got Vlad and Scherzer's going to the Hall of Fame and Gausman is a frontline excellent pitcher. So you've got like the marquee. But then Varsho, Barger, Lucas, IKF is excelling. You know, Jimenez, who I thought was a stiff, is coming up with everything from key hits to key bunts. It's a great mix of great players and scrubs that are not playing like scrubs.
Jimenez, game three. Jays are down 2-0 in the series. Jays are down 2-0 in game three. He hits the 2-run home run to tie it in that third inning where they would score 5. And then on top of that, the comeback story. Now, there's comebacks. The Jays led baseball this year in comeback wins. Well, then there's George Springer. George Springer was horrible last year. Mm-hmm. George Springer, the last 2 years, his numbers were going down, and he's 35.
Yeah.
Then he ended up being the best player for the Blue Jays, or the second best player for the Blue Jays, in the regular season. And then he gets a fastball to the kneecap on game 5, and then he's able to deliver there.
Which looked So painful.
Horrible. So painful.
Oh my God. Anybody who stubbed their toe and you're taken out for 5 minutes, imagine a 95 mile an hour ball cracking you right on the kneecap. Like a ball peen hammer.
It was a fastball. That wasn't a curveball. Oh. That wasn't Jamie Moyer throwing junk.
Jamie Moyer, nice reference. Thank with you. His 69 mile an hour. Or Mark Eichhorn.
Yes.
Who else was notoriously slow?
Oh, well, I mean, you could get
I guess
anything.
The Necros.
The Necros, any of any spitball. But that's cheating, going with, you know, the R.A. Dickies of the world.
The knuckleballers.
Yeah.
I want to throw one more thing out, mm-hmm. and this is something that we love in a team, is that when they lose, they tend not to beat themselves. It's bad enough when you lose, especially in, you know, a high-stakes situation, but it just kills you when it's something stupid that does it. Like that game where they had the errors. I can't remember if it was the first or second, but they really blew it because they just kept booting the ball around. They don't do that much. They are leading the postseason in home runs, but also fewest strikeouts. They're just not a wah-wah. They're in everything. And you know what? Not everything's going to go your way. But they don't give you the frustration of watching professionals do something that is stupid.
Yeah, they don't have as many as the dumb mistakes.
Right.
And you saw that in both series. And it's funny, each game had, and I listed it, each game had a definitive moment.
Yeah.
You know, from Gausman striking out Aaron Judge in the sixth inning of game one, bases loaded, nobody out, to the George Springer 3-run home run in the seventh. Like, every game had a defined moment. And I mean, we can get into this at some point, but for the Blue Jays organization, they've now hooked a generation of fans. Because think about if you were super young in 1994, you either have no memory or little memory of 92, 93. Then you grew up, you became a teenager, you got into your 20s and your 30s, and the Blue Jays never once made the playoffs. And they were kind of irrelevant because the Yankees and Boston, those teams spent a lot of money. You enjoyed Pat Henkin, Roger Clemens, Roy Halladay, Carlos Delgado.
Sean Green.
But Carlos Delgado, the greatest forgotten athlete in Toronto sports history. And he had nothing to show for it. Mm-hmm. And now if you're 9, 10, 11, 12, you got this. And if you're in your mid-20s, you had Bautista, and now you got this. And now you are hooked. Like, how many fans of the first group I mentioned just turned away from baseball and became bigger Leaf fans? They became fans of the Raptors, who were coming around, and Vince Carter and DeRozan and Lowry and Kawhi. Now it's another generation of baseball fans have been created.
TV programmers love baseball because it chews up innings in the summer when there's not a lot of other stuff going on.
It's the Mark Burley of the programming.
That's amazing. Thank you. Well done, sir. I was going to say the Dennis Lamp.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But no, but yours is better. Tom Filer.
All right. Are we going to do this the whole time?
Yeah, we are.
We could.
We've earned it.
Yeah.
We've earned it. We've been fans of theirs since 77. Mm-hmm. We've earned it. But really, for the fans, baseball is all about the postseasons because it's a sport of discrete moments. It's not like basketball, which tends to be flowing and transitional. There are stoppages in play, but if it's a good game, they're very, very brief. It tends to be up and down. Hockey's totally up and down. You go minutes without stops, and there's no out of bounds. But baseball is set up like theater. It is one challenge. It's one battle after another.
Yes.
In fact, that's going to be, I think, never mind. What is it? I want it all. Is that the slogan from the team?
Yeah. Which is a horrible slogan.
Yeah, not crazy, but I think it should be one battle after another because that's what this team is.
Now, who?
Come on, Matt. That's good.
Oh, no. Bob, I was going to ask, who's Sean Penn's erect penis on the Blue Jays roster? If we're going to really do one battle after another.
Well, let's hope it's not Brendan Little.
Yeah.
Hey-o. Okay, I got some narratives for you. But before we do that, what was your opening thought today? I'm just curious.
Oh, I just snuck it by you. It was mostly just about
Tampa Bay?
No, it was mostly about just a new generation.
Yeah.
It was mostly just about a new generation of fans, and how does the Blue Jays or how does the Maple Leafs power play do against the Devils tonight that are 19 for 20 on the penalty kill?
When Little goes in, and I'm going somewhere with this, right?
Yeah.
Comes out of the pen, he goes in. It completely blows it. The team was six outs away from sealing the deal. It kind of felt like we've been John Schneidered again.
Yep.
Right. He's overthought this. He's loved his matchups too much. And yet, in the last two games, particularly yesterday, like, he pulled Bieber early. And that's a guy who's been a Cy Young winner. You know, he didn't look great, but he wasn't getting shelled. But he pulled him early. You know, Bassett was used in a great spot. Gausman used in a great spot. Hoffman, even after throwing like 35 pitches the day before, comes in. There were a lot of calls that Schneider had to make. And eventually, it got the team to the end. So here's where I'm going with this. Hmm. Has he redeemed himself for the overthinking of the past because now they're in the World Series?
Yes.
He's not thinking less, but his calls worked out.
Several moments. One.
Okay.
Remember what he did in game four against the Yankees. Yankees won game three.
Is that the bullpen game?
That's the bullpen game. And the Yankees had Cam Schlittler. Last time we saw him, he kicked the Schlittler out of the Red Sox. And now eight pitchers, none threw more than 27 pitches, him and Pete Walker, and the Yankees scored two runs in that game four. And yeah, he did. He screwed up with Brandon Little. But go ask Seattle fans how they're feeling about Dan Wilson. Go ask Yankee fans how they're feeling about Aaron Boone. And then there's one other point. When game four, the Max Scherzer game.
Mm-hmm.
Two out in the fifth. John Schneider's going out just to go like, hey, Max. By the way, Max, don't look at me in the eyes. You're scary. Okay, please stop looking at me.
Looks like half the scary Halloween stuff in your house right now.
There's going to be people that are going to go out as Max Scherzer for Halloween.
That's a great costume.
It is a great costume.
You got to get those googly eyes.
Googly
though.
Eyes and just stare and get really angry. But Max Scherzer basically said, fuck off. Yeah. And John's like, just checking, fuck off. Okay, I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets... strikes at the batter, Randy Rosarain, excuse me, and then comes out, gets two outs in the sixth, and is pulled soon afterwards. After that game, you know, Schneider said about, you know, just one human with another human, just figuring it out. Compare that to what happened when they pulled Barrios. Yeah. And that was, computer, decide to take out Barrios. Like, then was, oh no, we're all analytics by the book. The organization is telling me what to do. Compare that to game four with Scherzer.
So it's a bit of applied learning.
Yeah.
He learned to trust his vet.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give him too much rope.
No, but he gave him some.
But he gave him some.
Pitched the two, got a couple outs in the sixth.
You know, I also think, you know, one of the things about managing a team, and it's like managing any team in life, whether it's your staff at work or even a family, like if there's happiness in the room, you have to be doing something right. Nobody's happy like that in a shitty environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen you make the best of a lot of situations, Matt, and you're a happy guy.
I am.
You know, and I've always thought, actually, this was always something, you know, we're going to make this about you for a second.
Thank God.
You were always a smart guy, you were always a hardworking guy, and you were always a very loyal guy, very trustworthy. But in some ways, your greatest gift was the fact you made everyone better because you made them want to be there. And the best thing that I did as the boss of the team off the record back then was I empowered you guys to be happy.
Yeah. You were like Seinfeld. You're incredibly talented, but you were fine letting the other people be stars.
You know, and you guys just, you know, and I look at Schneider and the way he's run that room, like those guys really like each other. This is maybe a little unfair, but I was thinking about Stolarz calling out the Leafs. Like, I've been crushed in my crease. You guys are standing around, like, looking at your phones while I'm getting clobbered here. And I thought, you know, like, that's how you lose a room, when guys don't stand up for each other. When Morgan Riley, remember there was the episode, I guess it was against Ottawa, and
yeah,
there was the slap shot goal, and, yeah, you know, he winds up suspended for five games. There's not a coach in the world that doesn't want Riley to do what he did because he's letting everybody on that team know, I'm here for us. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the Jays have that for each other. They seem so invested in each other's success. And that starts at the top. And I don't think it starts at the top like Ed Rogers, who gave one of the most awkward championship winning speeches of all time.
Yeah.
Like that was...
He just looks greasy.
Oh my God. Just all about that was...
You know what he looks like? When you're at a family party and there's one relative you haven't seen and you're like, oh, I don't want to talk to Edward. And your mom goes, talk to Edward. Oh, what? I just want to play with my friends. Just go. No one's talking to Edward. Go talk to Edward.
It was like Judge Smale's kid from Caddyshack. I just don't want to talk to this guy. You know, I don't think it's Atkins. I don't think it's Shapiro. I feel like this vibe, you know, Schneider dropping all these F-bombs and just, you know, acting like John Kruk, but like as a manager. It seems to work for this group. And that vibe, clearly, that got them through some tough moments.
It did. And you talk about happiness. Happiness is also equal to trust. Louis Varland. And I know he gave up the solo shot to Cal Raleigh. Mm-hmm. He also came in the fourth with two men on and I think got Julio Rodriguez out. Louis Varland said, you know, one of the things that was empowering to him was that the team trusted him.
Yeah.
And that made him a better pitcher.
Yeah.
Quick aside about John Schneider, I am a little bit disappointed.
Why?
So when they beat the Yankees, you know, he's like, start spreading the news. We're going to the motherfucking World Series. So he took a shot.
Yeah.
I wanted him to get the mic and just go, fuck you, Fraser Crane. We're going to the World Series. Like, I wanted him to take some shots. We just shoved the space needle up Major League Baseball's ass.
Well, this is the thing about Seattle is they're a very likable team.
I know.
They're a likable organization and a lovable part of the world.
Could he have mentioned Roz, Daphne, Eddie, Niles? Or maybe just Fraser's are such a well-written show.
I thought the movie Singles was overrated.
Yes, exactly. Or go for a cheap joke, Starbucks, whatever.
If we're honest, Pearl Jam is just a jam band with a good lead singer.
Yeah, and again, no one understands a word Eddie Vedder says. But you know what everyone understands? We're going to the World Series.
Oh, man. The thing, the flip side of sports can be so brutal. Like, the Jays are out there celebrating, and the guys in Seattle in the dugout, like, 5, 10, 15 minutes after the game's over. Oh, so hard to
watch. Did you hear the scream?
No.
So when Brian Wu was being interviewed,
mm-hmm.
and the reporter's asking, so, you know, what does this mean for the season? Blah, blah, blah. You know, your legacy. Just, you know, standard question. You could hear in the background someone screaming. And this scream was so terrifying. And also, it made me so sad. We only played it once. Normally, what I was thinking of doing was, let's compare and contrast. Someone screaming to David Ortiz and Vlad, you know, just flamenco dancing together after the game. But I heard the scream once, and even I was like, oh. And I'm like, I don't want to play. I was like, no, I don't want to play that again. I feel so bad for whoever it was. Like, the cruelty of a game seven, the contrast in emotion is just wild.
If it was the Yankees lose, we would love that scream.
Yes, that one was great. But this was someone, like, they sound like they're in pain. Like, it could have been from a Halloween movie. The scream, and you only heard it in the background. The Brian Wu said, yeah, that kind of sums up who we are, how we're feeling right now. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not making fun of you.
And I don't know if they'll be back necessarily. They got a really good starting rotation, but baseball, all sports, so fickle.
Jays had won 74 games and were last in the American League East last year. A year ago, Baltimore was going to dominate the American League East.
You just never know. You know, individual pitchers, they're so strange. It's so hard to... I always think about, like, Aaron Sanchez and how he was so untradeable. And
ERA
he was
the leader, Bob. Led the AL and ERA that one year.
Yeah, and 3 years later, you know, he can't get arrested. Do you want to talk about the upcoming World Series? Because I got some thoughts for you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about last night's game?
I think the last thing is just I felt great for Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't he good?
He was so good. And as you mentioned, he pitched two innings in game six. He struck out the side in game seven in a one-run game. It's not like they were up by three or four. And I think that's so important going forward for him to have that confidence, for him to, again, have that proof of concept of no, like, because he had some great months in the regular season and some shitty months. But for him to do what he did in those two games is great for him and for the team.
That's a really good point. He, off the top of my head, I'm thinking 12 strikeouts in nine innings so far in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be somewhere around there.
So he's been good.
Yeah.
And they can't win without him, and the bullpen's a whole question. I'm sure we're going to get into that. I'll just park a couple of concerns that I have moving forward. Not even talking about the Dodgers and how good they are, but just things that we saw over seven games with Seattle that, you know, you hope they're blips or that they can be ironed out in the next round, but we'll see. I kind of feel like the narrative in the next one, like, because you're looking hard to what's my foothold here? You got two teams. They've only played together 30 times ever in the history of interleague play. They don't know anything about each other. There's no heat there whatsoever. Shohei Ohtani turned the Jays down. Roki Sasaki turned the Jays down. So those two players that embarrassed us, we're now facing off against them. Can we get some heat there?
No.
Damn.
We can't, because with Sasaki, you know, he wanted, geographically, the Dodgers made more sense. There was already a Japanese player on the team. And with Shohei Ohtani, I think he was super impressed with Toronto, but I think he was always going to go to the Dodgers, because much like in the NBA with the Lakers, certain franchises have geographical advantages, which I always hate because I don't like seeing teams getting ahead because of their longitude and latitude and not about meritocracy. But that's just the case with the Dodgers.
Okay, so before we get into the pitching staffs, just a quick question for you, because I went on Ticketmaster today to order a ticket.
Oh.
And then you always have to ask yourself the question, how high am I willing to go here? I've got a fantasy auction tonight in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And the question is always Cade Cunningham. Mm. How high? Of course I want him. How high am I willing to go, though? How much money would you pay to go down and see a game live?
So I probably wouldn't, and here's why.
You wouldn't at all?
Well, I mean,
not even face value?
No, of course, face value. But my point, what I was going to say is that I don't like baseball when you're way, way up high. It's just harder to assess what's going on. You can't read, was that a strike or a ball? Hockey, I can be up high. Football, I often prefer up high. Basketball, not as much. But baseball, I'd have to be closer. And I don't know. I don't know if I would have the money to realistically to buy a ticket. If you could get me front row 500s, $350. I go on $350.
I'd go up to 500 mm-hmm. to be there. Everything you say is true. And I don't even like heights. So we'll just stitch that into the fact it's mm-hmm. bad sight lines. You're not really connected to the action. And I'd probably feel like I was going to die or throw up the whole time I was up in the 500s. Mm-hmm. But there is just something about an event.
I know.
That is, it's unreproducible. And a final is that. The biggest regret of my whole sports life, actually I have two. The first one is that I was at the All-Star game in San Francisco where Vince did the famous dunk contest.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I had to choose because I wanted to go and see City Lights Bookstore, and I had to choose will I see the rookie game or the dunk contest, and I actually left for the dunk contest to come back for the rookie game.
Oh, Bob. Oh, that's a bad one.
That's a bad one.
That is a bad one on you.
Yeah, and then the other one is that I didn't pay for tickets to go see the Raptors in the final.
Mm.
Those are my two biggest sports regrets.
Right. I am also, though, maybe this is a time where I'm less optimistic. It's I also have the image of, I don't want to be there if they lose. You know, mm-hmm. like, if you can okay. If you can guarantee me I'm going to see a win, I'll pay a grand.
See, this is the thing. My wife was looking at concert tickets for our daughter. She's 15 and she's in the concert phase of life. And concert tickets are crazy expensive right now. Crazy.
I'm aware. I've heard.
You know, take Taylor Swift off the table. Ooh, okay. Even just like, you know, she goes to see a concert last night. It's $200 to go.
$200?
Yeah.
It better have been someone I've heard of before.
No. Ooh. It's someone that she's heard of, though, and that's the important thing.
Okay.
But here's the thing. You know it's going to be good.
Exactly.
You know it's going to be good. And if you're charging $200 a ticket, you're not just rolling out some amplifiers and playing whatever's off the top of your head. There tends to be a show. It's not like the old days where you'd get 60, 70 minutes. Good night. Thank you very much. You know, they're putting on 2+ hours every night. It's a guaranteed night out. It's like going to the theater. They rehearse, so it's good. The sports.
It's a gamble.
It's a gamble. It could be 13-1 after three innings.
Yeah, it's high ceiling, low floor. You know, if they lose, it's a horrible, horrible feeling.
So it is a gamble, but God, to have been there when Springer hit that home run.
Oh yeah, that would have my brother Josh, him and his wife, and they took the kids, and there's a video of Graydon and Elliot, my nephew, celebrating. It's awesome. It is awesome.
My family coming back from that concert last night actually phoned me.
Do you even remember the name of who was performing?
Her name is Laufey.
Laufey?
Laufey.
Laufey, I have no idea.
Or something.
Okay, you have no idea. You're a hell of a dad. You have no idea. Just, you could have lied to me.
No, I actually think it makes me a good dad that I don't know what my daughter's into because I'm not helicopter parenting her.
Good point. Also, way off topic. Is there anything worse than...
We haven't been off topic even once yet.
I know, it's been rare. A grown-ass man who knows everything that's going on with pop culture. Like, if you're in your 40s and you know what's going on with, like, Selena Gomez's dating life, it's like, get a life. You're in your mid-40s. Mm-hmm. You should be in a Scotch return on investment, your mortgage, your kids... You know, your 401k or whatever the hell, your pension. You should these men in their mid 40s. Oh yeah, Sabrina Carpenter. You should have seen what she said yesterday. I'm like, no, I shouldn't have.
You should be more interested in should I take Ozempic than who is the musical guest on Saturday Night Live.
Well, Bob, I don't have diabetes, so why would I ever take Ozempic? Wink! Here's a thing for weight loss.
That was almost a glick. Yeah. You almost glicked it up there.
So, ooh, weight loss.
Seems like you're taking the Ozempic. You're very much an O right now. I guess you want to be an L, a lowercase L, as in loser. Best I got off the top of my head.
Not bad. So, thoughts on the upcoming series?
Oh, scared to death.
Yeah.
The Dodgers are the best team in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care about the regular season. The team, like, you know, at the end of the year when they'll say which was the team that used the most pitchers because of injury?
Mm-hmm.
Those teams tend to be at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
The Oakland, the White Sox. I think that was the Dodgers. They used like almost 40 pitchers this year. And they still won the National League West. And why was that? Because they had all the talent and because they could outspend their injuries.
Their payroll is almost $200 million more than ours.
Yeah.
And we're a big market club.
Exactly. One of the reasons why, I mean, listen, you know, they're a very sound organization. They've won the National League West in like 13 of the last 14 years. They also have the best cable deal in all of baseball.
Yeah.
Their cable deal brings in 4 or 5 times more per year than the Washington Nationals. And Washington is not a small market. And Washington's had a lot of star players. So the behemoth that is the Dodgers scares the hell out of me when going into game 4 against Milwaukee, LA had won the first 3 games. LA was like 8-1 in the playoffs. And Shohei Ohtani was hitting like 158. And Freddie Freeman was hitting like 220. And it didn't mean sweet shit because all the talent. And last year, the bullpen saved them. This year, the bullpen isn't that good, except for now Roky Sasaki seems to have figured it out. And every starter is an ace. When Tyler Glasnow or Ohtani is your number 4 pitcher, holy shit.
They have the best rotation in baseball. I don't think there's any question about that. The Jays rotation isn't bad.
No, it's not.
I do feel like we were hanging a lot throughout that Seattle series, like whether it was Bieber in this first start was pretty good.
Yep.
Wasn't that great last night.
Correct.
Gausman in his first start wasn't that good, was better the second time around. Mm-hmm. Savage, exactly the same thing. Snell, Glasnow, Yamamoto, Ohtani. You might get one bad game out of one of them once.
Yeah. They're a big favorite. And this is they should be. And this is baseball. We've seen mid-80 win St. Louis Cardinal teams with David Freese winning the MVP. Mm-hmm. By the way, I feel bad for
David Freese. Yeah, nice David call. Freese. Third baseman, David Freese. I think it was a contract year.
The funny thing about David Freese, I feel bad for him because we're damning him with faint praise. Like, remember when David Freese won an MVP? And Dave's like, hey, I made it in the majors.
The Dave Boland of baseball.
Yeah, but he's like, hey, why are you shitting on me? I won an MVP. Anyway.
What was the guy who had the 2 picks in the Super Bowl again? Was it for
Larry
the Cowboys?
Brown. Larry Brown. Larry Brown when Pittsburgh lost to Dallas. And Larry Brown went on Conan O'Brien. And I was 19 at the time. And even I understood. I'm like, Larry, enjoy this moment of fame. You're here because Neil O'Donnell threw 2
very bad
passes.
You know the ultimate
passes
for that? And young people won't remember this. You might not even. But it was the 1985 Kansas City Royals. And the superstar from that team was George Brett.
Yeah.
But the lovable superstar, the nobody who excelled, Buddy Biancalana.
Mm. That sounds like a pizza joint in L.A.
And that was a joke for Letterman night after night was, what's Buddy Biancalana doing?
Yeah.
So Biancalana eventually goes on Letterman. And they had this thing like, where's Biancalana versus Babe Ruth?
Yeah.
Right? They were doing this running tally throughout the playoffs.
That's a great bit.
Yeah, it's a great bit. But then he had the best comeback, the Biancalana did. He comes on and goes, yeah, so you're comparing me to Babe Ruth, right? And he goes, yeah, sort of like you and Carson.
Great line.
Great line.
Oh, my God. That's a good
floored Letterman.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it was really good.
For the Jays to win, they're going to need multiple players once again playing above themselves.
Right.
And we've seen that from Clement and Jimenez and Lucas. We've mm-hmm. seen it from those guys. It's a lot to ask, but it's going to have to happen again. And we'll have to see what happens with Bo Bichette. But one of the sneaky guys who's going to have to be important in this is Alejandro Kirk, who hasn't been great. It's just a moment.
He was one of my worries.
He's going to have to be great because they're not going to give Vlad much to pitch. They're not going to give him much.
No, that's I'm kind of shocked that Seattle didn't pitch around him more often.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm terrified. I'm terrified of the Dodgers. By the way, this is Thursday's opening thought, not even tomorrow's. I was at the cottage on my own for a couple of days. I had time on my hands. The Dodgers are the closest thing to in base. This is the closest baseball's ever had to the 2016 Golden State Warriors. When they brought in Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Like just they lost one game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They battered the Milwaukee Brewers. Had more wins and had the best run differential in all of baseball, and it didn't mean sweet shit because the Dodgers are like, okay, we're now going to go to our highest form, and they wiped out Philadelphia, and who cares what they did to the Cincinnati Reds. Philadelphia was like, I think, the favorite to win the World Series, and the Dodgers are like, that's cute. Get out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm terrified.
The obvious things are Vlad has to be great.
Yep.
The obvious things are the... You know, the starting rotation has to give you at least five quality starts out of a possible seven games.
Yeah.
Which they haven't. They did not do against the Seattle Mariners.
We need to see more starters going six
yes.
full innings.
And, you know, the Dodgers, like John Schneider is obsessed with matchups even more so than the average baseball person who is already obsessed with matchups. The bullpen has four lefties in it, and the Dodgers have big-time left-handed bats. Otani, Muncy, Freeman. Mm-hmm. It feels like Fluharty is going to be called upon in a higher leverage situation at least two or three times.
And he did well one time at win against the Dodgers, came into the ninth inning with bases loaded and one out. And he got Otani struck out and he got Mookie Betts to line out.
It's not a sexy player to watch, but if it is a close series, it's going to be one in some key moments. And I have a feeling he's going to be on the mound for at least a few of them.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's one of the points I brought up today. My top five. Yeah, my top five World Series storylines. One of them was Mason Fluharty.
Okay.
What the Jays are going to need, and this is, it's hard to ask a non-hero to be a hero.
Yep.
We love the unexpected hero, but we love it because it's usually rare, because it's hard to be a hero when you're not one.
The Buddy Bianca Lanas of the world.
The Buddy Bianca Lanas is going to be required. Like, the Jays have to play. The Jays have to play. More players have to be at an A level to win this series. The Dodgers can be B level and still win. And it's nothing against the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays were the best team in the American League. It's just this Dodgers team has got more talent than anyone else in baseball.
And they're peaking.
Yeah, they're exactly.
They're peaking. And I think, you know, your point about them not caring about the regular season is an important one, because you can talk about overall records. It doesn't matter. What you've got is a group of highly gifted, super professional, like players that are just like stacked. The pitching staff is stacked. The bullpen, you know, we'll see. Although Sasaki makes me nervous.
But Sasaki now makes that bullpen better. And
yes, listen, makes me nervous in the sense of he could take us down.
And Blake Treinen last year was the star. Why can't he get that back? Maybe a better comparison than the Warriors? They're last year's Florida Panthers. I think Florida cared about winning the Atlantic? No. They've got everyone healthy. And then they, you know, beyond, they did face a game seven against the Maple Leafs, but they crushed the Leafs in game seven. And they just went on their merry way and won the cup.
Another team, another player that I think is going to have to be good. So Fluharty, right? We're talking about our
peripheral
figures that we're winning. You see how they do. You've got Kirk. We've got Fluharty so far. I think Varland's going to have to be important, and I think it's going to manifest as he's got to be able to give two clean, two-inning appearances in this series. So one of these stars is going to get knocked around. He's going to come in the fourth. He's going to have to be the stabilizing force that allows no more runs, and I suspect once for sure, possibly even twice.
Yeah.
It can't be giving up one or two runs. It's got to be clean.
The fun one I'm looking for is... The Dodgers do strike out a lot. They averaged over nine strikeouts a game in the playoffs. I want, like, Trey Savage and all that youth, but all that, like, he's got the best high-end stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a young guy. He doesn't have the best high-end control, but he's got the best high-end stuff. I'm curious to see Savage against the team that will strike out a bunch.
Yeah, they strike out the other team a lot. To me, like, that's such a fascinating matchup, because the Jays don't strike out a lot.
Nope.
During the regular season, the Dodgers struck out just 5% of the batters they faced, second overall in Major League Baseball. So I think the series is going to come down to that. How many base runners can you get out there, and how many long grinding move the line forward innings can you put together?
My concern is that, you know, in a week and a half from now, we're talking about how, you know, the Dodgers are entering dynasty territory.
Yes.
That's the concern, that no one was going to stop them, whether it was the and no one in the NL did, and that, you know, it was, Seattle wouldn't have been able to, the Yankees wouldn't have been able to. That is the concern. But we see upsets in baseball. We see more upsets in baseball than we do in basketball. But when you have seven games, that's the thing. Single game series, hey, I love it. Seven game series, usually in the end, the better team usually wins.
This reminds me a bit of the feeling of the Thunder versus the Pacers last year, where the Jays are filling the role of the Pacers, where at every turn, they seem to just find ways to win, and they were extremely lovable. But in the end, you know, especially after Halliburton goes down, they just didn't have the horses to get over the clear best team in the association.
Right? Yeah.
And I can't imagine the Jays are going to win this series. I think they're probably going to scrape out a win, maybe two. If I had to put money on it, I'd say Dodgers in five.
I'd say Dodgers in six would be mine.
The starting rotation is rested, and they want to win. They're focused. They're on a heater right now. I think it's five. It could be six. I can't imagine this going to seven.
Yeah, no, I can't either. Again, I hope I'm wrong. And, you know, maybe, hey, rested means just jack shit. How are Jays fans feeling about Seattle after Seattle was gassed and they won the first two games in Toronto? And, hey, the Dodgers got to come here. So the Jays do have home field.
Yeah, I was thinking that game seven could be epic. What do you think if you gave Toronto sports fans truth serum, what do you think they'd rather see this year? World Series win from the Jays, third round from the Leafs?
I'll go the World Series. I would go the World Series. Like, you know, the expression, flags fly forever, and the Jays are a more likable team than the Maple Leafs are
Toronto
right now.
Toronto has such a funny relationship with the Jays. There's such a deep love for that team in this city. And when they're good, it animates the city differently than everything else. You know,
because there's 81 games. That's part of it.
You really get to know them. It's this story that you're stitched in day after day. I mean, baseball is a game of habits. It's a game of, like, a long, slow narrative. It really pulls you in. It's almost more like family. Mm-hmm. You know, NFL is like the in-laws that come in, or the family, the friend that comes in, and it's exciting, and then it's out the door again. This is family. This is like close, long bonds.
I'll try. The NFL is watching a great action movie. Hockey and basketball, because it's 82 games, is your binge watching a four-season show. Mm-hmm. But baseball is Johnny Carson. Baseball is David Letterman. Yeah. It's on every night, and you get to know, you know, Paul Schaefer, you get to know, but Larry Bud Melman, you get to know all these people, and it's there every night. You know exactly when it's
on. You know, Matt, thank you so much for finishing that, because I knew I was on to something, but I didn't deliver the goods, but you picked it up.
Yeah.
And you took it over the finish line. Thank you for that.
You know, it's what we do. It's we are the analogists. Sounds like the worst superhero
I was like
movie.
Addison Barger getting on base last night, and you were like George Springer. You know,
God, that was a great home run. Anyways.
How much time do you have?
Oh, we got, let's see. We still have about 14 minutes.
Okay, well, I got some dot, dot, dots to do.
All right, before you do them, this podcast brought to you by our lawyer, Jeff Pollack. Jeff with a G, jeffpollack.com. He sent a text going, hey, guys, we need a podcast. And you wrote, I'm already on my way over there. And he did the heart emoji or whatever that is. And yes, I mean, he's a friend of ours, and he's a great guy. He's got a great family. He's a great father, and he's a great lawyer. JeffPollack.com. Not too much else. So JeffPollack.com. And now we go to dot, dot, dot. That is a C-minus level a segue that everyone could see me formulating 4 seconds ago.
I could also go into just a general topic about food that comes out of Jeff Pollack and the lunch that I had with him.
Oh, what you had for lunch?
Well, I had a borscht because I'm not eating anything these days. Mm-hmm. But he, I'm so glad you asked. We went to Future Bakery and we got Ukrainian food. Mm-hmm. And he got some pierogies and I can't remember what else he got. But there was also mashed potatoes with gravy. And that was the reason I wanted to go there, because I just had a gut feeling he would love the mashed potatoes and gravy. And Matt, I'm not eating gravy right now, but God, it looks good. There's just something about when gravy hits mashed potatoes, magic happens.
I'm going to surprise you.
Okay.
I don't mind gravy.
You don't mind?
I don't mind gravy. With my mashed potatoes, butter and garlic. I will take butter and garlic over the gravy. And last weekend, I was at the cottage by myself, so I cooked up a bunch of giant like shrimp, and I included it into some garlic mashed potato with a little butter. I got to tell you, that was heaven.
My mouth is watering just hearing it.
Oh.
So I came up with a list. I didn't do a top five exactly. It's just a list of best sauce and food pairings.
Oh my God. Okay, go.
You ready?
Yeah.
So inspired by mashed potatoes and gravy, nachos and cheese at the ballpark. It's got to be the shitty nacho cheese though.
That is shitty cheese. That is just, that is.
It's not even pretending to have anything to do with cheese.
Oh yeah.
In name only.
You can be the most lactose intolerant person and the cheese at the ballpark will be completely fine with your body.
You could caulk your shower with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hollandaise sauce on Eggs Benedict.
Excellent.
Right? Otherwise, so it's good. Just eggs on bread.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you need, without the Hollandaise sauce, what's the point of Eggs Benny?
One thing I like about Hollandaise sauce is it is so, like, snooty. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything but eggs.
But it's so, but it's also so simple. Like, it's snooty, but it's, you know, it's just like butter.
Same thought on Piri Piri chicken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Otherwise, it's just roasted chicken. Yeah. But, you know, Portugal built a whole economy on Piri Piri sauce. Mustard on a hot dog.
I mean, I am a fan, but.
Is that how you dress it, though? And I'm going somewhere with this. So I'm a mustard and sauerkraut guy.
Okay. So you're more of a man than I am. I'm a child.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
I will put sometimes, like, if there's no mustard, I'm fine with just ketchup. I'm a 7-year-old child. And I will get ketchup shamed. It's one of the, people will shame you for ketchup if it's on anything but French fries or a hamburger. And listen, I like mustard. I'm fine with mustard, but I'm like a 7-year-old with my wiener. I am fine. I am fine with,
sure,
just ketchup.
Are you sure you mean it that way?
So, you know, not take
like
that
one. Like a 7-year-old with my wiener?
No. I'm like a 7-year-old. Yes, with my wiener, not their wiener, Bob. This isn't weird. I'm talking about my 7-year-old wiener. Totally normal.
Sandra had the best line about this. She goes, if you get to a certain age and you haven't outgrown ketchup, it says a lot about you.
My 25-year-old producer, he's 25,
mm-hmm.
describes my life as whimsical. Like, that's something Bob would say.
Is your producer like a theater critic for the New York Times?
He is not, but he knows a lot about my lifestyle, Bob. He's 25. He's already nailed it. Listen, I'm going to say,
whimsical's a good word, actually.
It is. I'm just going to say this. I'm tired of this. It's 2025. We're not allowed to make fun of anyone anymore. Thanks, Biden. But you can rip someone for ketchup. I speak for the ketchup people out there. It still has a place in my heart, in my home, and in my fridge.
One thing I love about Michael Ansberg is when you go to a steakhouse with him, he gets ketchup on his steak.
Nope. Fuck that. Fuck that.
And he does not care.
I will ketchup shame the shit out of you if you put ketchup on a steak. See? Flip-flop. It's just like Biden.
Like, yeah, like mustard on prosciutto. Okay. Yeah, sure. Whatever. tomato sauce in a veal sandwich.
Yep. Not a problem.
Otherwise, if it's just dry, you got this great cutlet, but yeah, it really requires the sauce. Okay, here's a surprising one. Chicken McNuggets and McDonald's sweet and sour sauce, specifically.
Well, because they were designed for one another.
They really love each other. And in the same way, shitty egg rolls with packets of plum sauce.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Has anyone ever used, like, anything but their teeth to open one of those packets? Like your sharp little canine tooth, which is really the plum sauce opener.
Think about how many assholes, and these people are assholes, I'm sorry if you're one of these listening, will use their foot to flush a urinal, and they're so precious about germs, and they're, I can't get dirty. But these same people will take that sauce packet and put it in their mouth and rip it open. Like,
where do you think that package been?
People are very picky about when they're finicky about germs and stuff.
These are the same people that wipe the top of the pop can before they open it.
Oh, I can't stand these people.
Duck a l'orange. I think more things should be a l'orange.
Ooh, hot take.
It's delicious.
It is delicious.
A good orange sauce.
Of course. But also it's duck, which is still my favorite of all the meats.
Tzatziki on pork souvlaki.
You need it. You need it. And by the way, pork souvlaki, a little overrated. You know, like it's all good.
But a good tzatziki makes it sing.
No, it does. But like, I've never had souvlaki that was an A.
But
I've never had souvlaki that's a D. Souvlaki, it's always a B. That's fine.
It's the Mark Burley.
It is the late career Mark Burley of meals.
It just gets you through.
Exactly.
Yeah, beautiful. What the fuck is cocktail sauce for shrimp? Because it is delicious.
Oh, Bob. It's like you were at the cottage on Friday night.
Did you do it?
Of course. What do you think? I'm an animal?
6 o'clock. What am I, a farmer?
Yeah, exactly.
30 Rock.
30 reference. Rock reference, Jack. But, oh, you need it. And the funny thing is, the cocktail shrimp sauce is so cheap. And then you'll buy, like, you'll sometimes spend, like, you get the big Black Tiger shrimp stuff. Mm-hmm. It's pricey. But you need the cheap sauce to make the expensive shrimp sing.
It's just ketchup and horseradish, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so good. Yeah. And that with some mashed potato, garlic mash. And by the way, I sauteed the shrimp with a little garlic as well. Oh, that was a good meal with a bottle of Beaujolais by myself at the cottage. Very whimsical.
Tahini, yes, nicely done.
Thank you.
Tahini on falafel. And then my last one, which is a question I want to throw your way. Spaghetti with a bolognese, a good meat sauce.
Yeah.
What's the entree? Is it meat sauce on spaghetti or is it meat sauce with a bed of spaghetti?
Because
I actually think the meal is the meat sauce.
Yes, it is. 100%.
Is this the only time where the sauce becomes the actual meal and the thing it's supposed to be sauced to becomes the support?
I think if it's just the sauce, you feel like you're having some sort of high-end chili. So you need the pasta to place yourself in the world of Italy, but it is about the sauce. Like a good ragu is just absolutely, yeah, now I'm hungry. Yeah. I don't even have a way to finish that thought.
.. Yeah. Where I give random thoughts in the spirit of Larry King or Steve Simmons, and then Matt picks one or two, and then we react.
We got 3 minutes left.
Oh, geez.
Oh, that's one of
our phones are going off.
That's one of the emergency Amber alert.
And we're back? Okay, I'm going to edit that together. I don't know why everything stopped recording right when the Amber alert went on. Very, very strange. All right, Bob, we got time for 2 ... What do you got?
Okay, who's a more awe-inspiring athlete right now? Shohei Ohtani or Victor Wembanyama?
Victor Wembanyama, Shohei Ohtani did something we've never seen. But Victor Wembanyama, just you can't take your eyes off of him. I will go very close. I will go Victor Wembanyama, but I totally understand if anyone goes the other way.
I'm not going to go the other way, only because Ohtani is not only dominant on both sides of the ball in baseball, he did something nobody else has ever done. Victor Wembanyama, as amazing as he is, has never done something that nobody's ever done before.
Yep, that's totally fair.
And then this last one, which I don't think anybody in Toronto's going to like. The Montreal Canadiens will win the Atlantic before the Leafs do again. ..
I can't go there yet because they are the promise of youth. They've got the new car smell of a team that is on the cusp of something great, but I can't go there yet.
And the Leafs kind of feel like they're moving in the opposite direction. But we can come back to that later when we do this next, okay? Because one last one I want to do here.
Yep.
Between the failing economy, failing tourism, gambling apps, and the Raiders, Vegas is truly falling apart, and I blame Mitch Marner.
By the way, you notice Vlad wore an Austin Matthews jersey, not a Mitch Marner one, to the game.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.